You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper, and what a time it is, folks. Let me give you some important goodies before we get into the meat of tonight's program. And you don't want to miss a minute of this, folks, because they tried to set us up today. And this will chill you. We'll get to it in just a few moments. First, Washington, Associated Press, for the first time on United States soil, NATO soldiers will hold a peacekeeping exercise with troops of the former Warsaw Pact. You understand what I'm telling you? The exercise, called Cooperative Nugget 95, will be held August 6th through the 28th at Fort Polk, Louisiana. About 4,200 troops from 14 Central and Eastern European countries, as well as the United States, Canada, and Britain, will participate. Nine countries will send observers, including France, Austria, and the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. The non-NATO countries participating are members of NATO's Partnership for Peace, a new arrangement designed to encourage Russia and other former Soviet republics, as well as the newly democratic East European nations, to adopt Western democratic practices such as ensuring civilian control of the military, and that's a crock of crap. This is all about combining the most powerful military forces in the world for ultimate absorption into the United Nations as the world police force. This, in case you didn't know it, will be the sixth military exercise held as part of the Partnership for Peace, but it's the first held in the United States. The Clinton administration had wanted Russia to participate in the August peacekeeping exercise, but Moscow has made no commitment. Don't worry, folks. The whole Eastern Bloc will be there, and they're all controlled by Russia. Don't believe everything that you hear in the press. A joint United States-Russian peacekeeping exercise separate from the Fort Polk event is to be held in Kansas in October. At the Fort Polk exercise, each participating country will contribute a rifle platoon. The platoons will be combined to form a NATO Partnership for Peace battalion. The national contingents will receive linguistic and technical support from elements of the 10th Special Forces Group from Fort Carson, Colorado. The scenario at Fort Polk will be a fictional border dispute between two hypothetical countries. The United Nations will attempt to resolve the dispute and establish a peacekeeping force to monitor the buffer zone between the two sides. Of the approximately 2,500 United States troops participating, most will be from the Army's 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment based at Fort Polk, said Major Walter Thorpe, a spokesman at U.S. Atlantic Command, which is helping organize the exercise. The non-NATO countries scheduled to participate are Albania, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Estonia, Hungary, Kyrgyzstan, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Romania, the Slovak Republic, Slovenia, Ukraine, and Uzbekistan. Each is expected to contribute between 30 and 40 soldiers, plus about 10 to act as observer controllers. All of this will help to prepare the American people for things of this nature on a grander scale until the United States is ultimately occupied by United Nations peacekeeping forces. If you don't believe me, just hang loose, folks. You're going to see it come true right before your very eyes. Now, I have here a letter. It says, Dear Mr. Cooper, the July 1995 issue of Monitoring Times contains an article by Glenn Hauser titled Oklahoma City, the Radio Aftermath. On page 26, in column 3, the following is printed. and I quote, WWCR's other super patriot programming, such as Tom Valentine and the white supremacist William Cooper, continued unabated, primarily weeknights on 5065, but also scattered at other times and on other frequencies, end quote. Well, I'm in the process of suing the New York Times, and I will begin the process tomorrow to sue the Monitoring Times and Glenn Hauser. I'm sick of this crap, folks. I have had it up to here. I'm going into high gear. I'm not taking any more of this bullshit, not for one single minute more. Then I have from the Palm Beach Post, Friday, June 23rd, 1995, in the opinion section, Save Gestapo and Hitler for Real Horrors, the Nazis. Listen to this, folks. This is the biggest deception and piece of hypocritical writing I have ever seen in my life. Quote, Ellen Goodman is right to remind us how inflammatory our political rhetoric has become. 50 years later, why are we still echoing Nazis? This kind of provocative speech ill serves the goals of civil discourse and positive change, pointing to, among others, the National Rifle Association letter that referred to federal agents as jackbooted government thugs who wear Nazi bucket helmets and black stormtrooper uniforms. Ms. Goodman illustrates how hurling epithets such as Nazi, Hitler, and Gestapo not only exaggerates the perceived threat or problem, but also diminishes the meaning of these words while minimizing the horror of the Holocaust. Ms. Goodman's warning is particularly relevant in light of the Oklahoma City bombing and the demonizing of the federal government and its agents by the various militia and patriot groups cropping up around the country. The use of Nazi terminology to refer to one's political opponents weakens the power of language and insults the memory of Hitler's victims, end quote. Now, this is amazing because it has been the patriots and the militia groups that have been demonized with the word Nazi. Guess who wrote this, ladies and gentlemen? Louise Schur, the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, West Palm Beach. The group that cannot even utter a sentence or open its mouth without using the word Nazi. Louise Schur, you are a liar and a hypocrite. More people are branded Nazis who don't deserve to be branded Nazis. For instance, William Cooper, who has spent most of his entire life defending minorities and trying to create a peaceful world full of liberty and justice for all people. You have called me a Nazi and a white supremacist. And you suck. Told you, folks, I'm finished taking the crap. Not taking any more of it. Make a copy of the tape and send it to the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. And here is another letter from Ted Haskell, member WGBH Television, PBS, the great voice of socialism in Boston, Massachusetts. He says, Bill, why are you yanking my chain? The Nazi Party was fascism. Fascism is on the political right. The political right is conformity and a police state characterized by militant nationalism. We aren't debating politics here. These are basic word definitions. Check any good dictionary. No, Mr. Haskell, don't check any good dictionary today. Go back before they began to change the meaning of words and check the dictionary. For instance, the 1828 edition of Webster's Dictionary, and you'll find out the real truth. They changed the meaning of the language in the courts. They've changed it in the dictionaries. They've changed it everywhere. And words that end in ism were never legitimate words in the history of the world. They're designed to confuse, deceive, and manipulate, which is what you were trying to do here, Mr. Haskell. Nazis were socialists. It was the National Socialist Workers' Party of Germany, Mr. Haskell. They nationalized everything. It is the left that exercises control, not the right. The right wants liberty, wants less government, wants to be left alone. Granted, the extreme right is just as bad as the extreme left. I will give you that. But don't try yanking my chain by asking with such venom why I'm yanking your chain. I'm yanking your chain because your chain needs to be yanked, along with a lot of other idiots in this country. What else have we got here? Oh, he's got a drawing here of scale. The left, total control, and the right, total control. In the center is neutralist, isolationist, and none involved. Well, where does that put a republic? He has it just a little bit right of center. Sorry, bud. You're full of it. Scales measure extremes. Pick up a scale that measures weight. You'll find one end is zero and the other end is as high as the scale goes. You have right-left. You have up-down. You have positive-negative. You have right and left. Total control on the left. Total absence of control on the right. In the middle is the republic. That's what our forefathers designed it to be. As much liberty as possible in a government to protect the rights of the individuals. That's the role of the government in a republic. Not to oppress, not to enslave, not to pay your medical bills, not to give you food or unemployment insurance. You, sir, are a socialist. That's why you're trying to work this deception on the rest of us. But we're not buying it anymore. And it wasn't me that yanked your chain. It was Thomas Colton Rutherford's letter to the editor in the Arlington, Washington Times of June 7, 1995, that jerked your chain. And Thomas Colton Rutherford is absolutely 100% right, and I'm going to read it to you again tonight. And all of you quit calling me and asking me if I will send you a copy of this. No, I don't have time. You get it the same way we got it. By building an intelligence network or by writing to the Arlington, Washington Times and asking for a copy of this letter to the editor. It's under the politics section. Quote, during the past several months in the American press, the Democrats have frequently denounced the Republicans as Nazis due to their attempt to control runaway federal spending. How very ironic. I remember the Nazis. Let me share with you a little about them and recall some of their exploits. Now, I'm really going to jerk your chain with Mr. Thomas Colton Rutherford's article. I'm going to jerk it as hard as I can. Right over the cliff. So listen closely. And you better grab onto a tree if you're a socialist, because if you don't, you're going to go with the chain. He says, I remember the Nazis. This is a man who was there. Let me share with you a little about them and recall some of their exploits. First of all, Nazi was gutter slang for the verb to nationalize. Now, folks, only socialists nationalize. Only communists nationalize. The Biedermeierhof gang gave themselves this moniker during their early struggles. The official title of the Nazi Party was the National Socialist Workers' Party of Germany. Do you understand? Does somebody have to pound it into your head? This lie has gone on long enough. Hitler and the brown shirts advocated the nationalization of education, health care, transportation, natural resources, manufacturing, distribution, and law enforcement. Hitler came to power by turning the working class unemployed and academic elite against the conservative republic. After Der Fuhrer's election, the Nazi Party ceased being a political conspiracy and was transformed into a fashionable social phenomenon. Party membership was especially popular with educators, bureaucrats, and the press, including PBS, which is the biggest voice for socialism besides the Communist News Network in this country. Being a Nazi was politically correct. They called themselves, and I quote, the children of the new age of world order, end quote, and looked down their noses at everyone else, just like the politically correct intelligentsia of today's new age of world order. As Hitler accrued more power, he began referring to his critics as, quote, the dark forces of anarchy and hatred, end quote. Where have you heard that recently, ladies and gentlemen? Where have you heard all of this recently? Anyone who questioned Nazi high-handedness in the German press was branded a conservative reactionary. Joseph Goebbels, Minister of Communications, proclaimed, quote, a new world order, end quote. The Nazi reign of terror began with false news reports on the radio and in the newspapers. Paramilitary groups of Poles, Jews, Bohemians, and Gypsies were said to be arming themselves to overthrow the, quote, new world order, end quote, and Hitler demanded that all good people register their guns so that they wouldn't fall in the hands of terrorists and madmen. Where have you heard that recently, ladies and gentlemen? Right-wing fanatics of the old order who protested firearms registration were arrested by the SS and put in jail for fomenting hatred against the government of the German people. Then the Reichstag government building was blown up and Hitler ramrodded an emergency anti-terrorist act through parliament that gave the Gestapo extraordinary powers and transferred the rights of the people into the hands of the Chancellor Adolf Hitler, and he became a dictator overnight. Exactly what is happening here in this country today. The leader then declared that for the well-being of the German people, all private firearms were to be confiscated by the Gestapo and the Wehrmacht, the federal law enforcement and the military. German citizens who refused to surrender their guns when the jackboots Gestapo came calling were murdered in their homes. By the way, the Gestapo was the Federal Marshal Service of the Third Reich. The SWAT team was invented and perfected by the Gestapo to break into the homes of the enemies of the German people, and you can see this in the films of the time. When the Polizei Bewachen, or the local police, refused to take away guns from townsfolk, they themselves were disarmed and dragged out into the street and shot to death by the SA and the SS, the Nazi version of the BATF and the FBI. When several Lutheran ministers spoke out against these atrocities, they were imprisoned and never seen again. The Gestapo began to confiscate and seize the homes, businesses, bank accounts, and personal belongings of wealthy conservative citizens who had prospered in the old republic. Pamphleteers who urged revolt against the Nazis were shot on sight by national law enforcement and the military. Gypsies and Jews were detained and sent to labor camps. Mountain roads throughout Central Europe were closed to prevent escape of fugitives into the wilderness and to prevent movement and concealment of partisan resistance fighters. Public schools rewrote history, and Hitler youth groups taught children to report their parents to their teachers for anti-Nazi remarks, and they are teaching your children to do the same thing today. Such parents disappeared. Pagan animism became the state religion of the Third Reich, and Christians were widely condemned as right-wing fanatics. You'd better take a look around, folks. Millions of books were burned first, and then people. Millions of them burned in huge ovens after they were first gassed to death. Unmarried women were paid large sums of money to have babies out of wedlock and then given medals for it. Evil was declared as being good, and good was condemned as being evil. World order was coming, and the German people were going to be the peacekeepers, just like the United States is said to be today. Yes, indeed. I remember the Nazis, and they weren't Republicans. They were socialists, and they were monsters. Signed, Thomas Colton Rufford Arlington. And this is from the Arlington, Washington Times, June 7, 1995. I hope I have really pulled your chain. And you all thought I was nuts when I said that Louis Jolyon West went to Oklahoma City? Here is from the Sunday Oklahoman, Sunday, June 25th, 1995, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Louis Jolyon West, chairman of psychiatry at the University of California at Los Angeles Medical School. West, now 70, has spent much of his career studying the effects of trauma on individuals and on communities. At UCLA, he has built a team of psychiatrists who travel around the world offering help to communities struck by disaster. Because we have a lot of experience here with disasters, as you can imagine, he said. West has also worked with survivors of terrorist attacks. He has been to Oklahoma twice since the bombing, helping the local mental health community plan in its response. He is the premier expert on mind control for the United States government and the intelligence community. So stick that in your pipe and smoke it. Don't go away. I'll be right back with a chilling tale of premonition for what's going to befall those of us here in the near future. Ladies and gentlemen, apparently we have been under surveillance here by the BATF and the Federal Bureau of Investigation for some time. The people next door at the Trail Rider say that there was a bugging outpost in the motel right next door to this building, and that they were offered a reward if they would call the Federal Bureau of Investigation and tell them when we began to bring the guns out the back door. These people are deluded, and they plant these things to turn the town folks against us. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth about what we do here. We collect information. Nobody in the intelligence service is required to carry a weapon. Nobody in the intelligence service has ever been asked to carry a weapon, or even if they own a weapon. We fight with information. I personally have a .375 H&H Magnum, which is an elk rifle. It's a big game rifle. If we ever go to war and I have to fight, I will use it in my own defense. I also have a Browning .30-06, which is a deer rifle. Both weapons are absolutely 100% legal. The .375 H&H Magnum carries 3 rounds in its magazine, and the Browning carries 4. I also have a 9mm pistol, all legal. I hand load to save money, all legal. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have any cop killer rounds or any of these things that they're always talking about. I am a law-abiding citizen. Not once has the FBI or the BATF ever come to talk to me or knocked on the door and said, gee, can we have a look around? Because any time they ever do, they're perfectly welcome to, as long as they do it politely, legally, and lawfully. If anybody, and let me tell you this clearly from my heart, if anybody wearing a ski mask, dressed in black, barges through my door in the middle of the night or any other time, and I don't know who they are, and I see a gun in their hand, I'm going to shoot them, as should anybody else. G. Gordon Liddy is absolutely 100% right. If they come to my door and knock on my door and present a warrant, I will abide by the terms of the warrant because I am a law-abiding citizen. Now, let's talk about what these scumbags did today. They are jackbooted thugs. It's the truth. Today, they tried to set us up, ladies and gentlemen. Being as I work late at night, I didn't come in today till about noon, and Bart is here. Bart, welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Hi, Bill.
What time did you get here this morning?
9 o'clock.
Bart was here at 9. I came in at about noon. I have mail to take care of. I have to download the messages from the databases, from our email sources, print out the cream of the crop, all kinds of things. Then I come in later because I'm here late at night to do the broadcast. Now, I was here maybe about an hour and a half. Bart said he was going to go get the mail. He left alone in his black blazer. And where did you go, Bart? Well, what time was it when you left?
I think it was about 1:30 or something, 1 o'clock, 1:30.
And that's about right.
Went to the hardware store to make a copy of the key. Went to the post office to mail out the mail and also check our mail in our post office box. Went to the library to drop off some books that I had checked out and check out some other books. And I went to the local gas station convenience store and got a Subway-type sandwich for lunch and came right back to eat my lunch here. Took about 25 minutes or something total, 30 minutes.
Now, we were both working. I was working on the BBS trying to get it ready to go back up online because it's been offline for way too long. And Bart was working on the next issue of Veritas, the newspaper, and the subscriptions and answering the phone. And I know that he was back at least 2 hours because it was about 4:20, 20 minutes after 4,
right,
when all of a sudden somebody opened the front door and hollered. And what happened then, Bart?
And I answered, can I help you? And a voice answered, Officer so-and-so from the local St. John's Police Department. And I said, what can I do for you? And they said they want to know who the owner of the black Blazer is that's parked out front. So I walked up to them. I said, it's me. That's my car. And there was three officers, two of them from the St. John's Police Department in uniform, and apparently one member of the Sheriff's Department who was not in uniform, wearing a cowboy hat, sunglasses, jeans, and just had his badge like flipped over his pocket. And I said, what's the matter? And they wanted to see identification, and they wanted to show proof, wanted me to show proof that that was my vehicle. And they said that my vehicle has been supposedly used in a crime, and they wanted to see where I was within the last 20 minutes of some type of crime that occurred.
Now, at this point, Bart sort of rebelled at all this kind of stuff because he was getting a little antsy. And he came back around to where I was, and I said, what's going on? And they said that the black Blazer was positively identified as having been involved in a crime within the last 20 minutes.
Right, that was what they first said, was 20 minutes. And then I asked, what was the crime? And they wouldn't tell me what the crime was. They just wanted to see identification, and they wanted to know, ask a whole bunch of questions, where I was, have I used the car, did anyone else drive my car, anyone else have access to my car? And I kept asking, what is it that they're looking for, or what type of charge are they going to say occurred? And they would not say at all. They refused to tell me.
Now, bear in mind, folks, that I did not go with Bart when he went to the post office. He left alone. He came back alone. And I believe that he was gone maybe 45 minutes to 50 minutes, something like that. And this is 2 hours later, and they're saying that he's been involved in his car has been involved in a crime within the last 20 minutes. Go ahead, continue, Bart. What happened then?
So then, to tell them what to show them, I said, my car hasn't been moved. It's been sitting out front ever since I got back from lunch. I even told them, I said, if you want, I'll go and pop the hood and they could feel my engine and they would know if my car was driven in the last 20 minutes. And especially my car is black and it was sitting out in the sun all day. It would be hot no matter, I mean, if I had driven it within the last 20 minutes, the engine would be very hot.
Or even in the last hour, it would have been very hot.
Exactly. So I took them out, and that was my own. I offered it on my own. I took them out to, well, before I took them out there, I showed them my driver's license, my registration, my proof of insurance to the officers. There was, like I said, three of them, two of them from St. John's Police Department, one from the Sheriff's Department. The lead officer, who was asking most of the questions, took my identification and paperwork, just looked at it nonchalantly. It didn't seem like he really cared too much about it. Then he handed it over to a younger officer who then was supposed to copy down my information, but then took my information and left the premises for about 15, 20 minutes. After which, then I took the other two officers, one officer from St. John's and the sheriff, to my car, popped the hood. Feel my engine. He just stood there. And I said, well, do you want to feel it? And he's all, no, I don't need to. And the member of the sheriff's department, instead of feeling my radiator, the radiator hose, feeling just, you would feel just the radiant heat of the engine, he immediately stuck his hand all the way down to the crankshaft area and the water pump and started keeping his hand there for like 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and saying, oh, this feels kind of warm, feels kind of hot here.
Basically, he couldn't make up his mind, could he?
Yeah, he had his hand down there for a long time and just couldn't, I mean, you could put, I even put my hand on the exhaust manifold, and it was cold. And I said, put your hand here, this is the exhaust manifold. And it's basically dead cold, because I'd driven it hours before. And they didn't seem, they were actually pretty biased. The sheriff saying, well, this feels kind of warm, actually. Feel it here. This feels warm, I think.
everything is warm in Arizona on a hot day. But nothing was hot. And when you can reach down and put your hand on the exhaust manifold of an engine, I can tell you it hasn't been driven in at least an hour.
Yes, definitely.
Probably more.
Now, I noticed that there were no police cars that were right outside our location or across the street. However, they were down the street at least 100 feet, and there were about four or five police cars parked on the corner near the mailbox, and there was, I even noticed a car from the highway patrol. There was an unmarked Caprice Classic car. There was a pickup truck that was unmarked with spotlights on it, as well as a couple other St. John's police cars, yet they all congregated far away from our location. And this is where the young officer who took my paperwork went over and apparently had a little powwow with whoever was over there, and I assume it was some superiors. When I tried to come back into the premises, into our building, so that I could get back to work, and if they wanted to, they were welcome to come back inside, and I told them I wanted to get back and to answer the phone and to get back to work. They did everything they could short of physically stopping me from coming inside. They tried to give me this, you're not cooperating with us. And I said, well, you're not even telling me what the charges are or what my car has been used in or whatnot. And I was getting a little antsy there because they were trying to keep me outside away from you because you were in here.
Yeah, he's talking about me.
Yes.
Every time that I got near them, especially the young officer, had this look of fear all over his face.
He had beads of sweat, literal beads of sweat on his forehead, as well as a speech impediment when he wanted to talk to you, or when I told him to explain the story that they later supposedly came out with about what my car was used in. And later, me.
So, what happened then?
Well, I came back inside and It was basically just right inside our door, where the other two officers immediately followed me, trying to stop me from continuing in near you, Bill. And they were trying to say that, they were trying to say that this is for my own good, to prove my innocence against the charge that they still won't tell me about.
See how they turned it around, folks? You're innocent until you're proven guilty in this country.
Right. They made me feel all guilty until proven innocent, and they kept saying that this is, for my own good, that they're trying to help me, prove that I'm not involved or something.
And how could he prove he was not involved when he didn't even know what they were talking about at this point?
Right. They won't tell me what the hell was going on.
When did they tell you? And what did they tell you?
Finally, the young officer who from St. John's Police Department who came in, his name is, I've got it here, Officer Darren Graham, badge number 905. Officer Darren Graham, badge number 905, came in, apparently a little nervous, beads of sweat on his forehead, and he spoke very nervously, came in, and I need to let people know that when they first arrived into the center, all they had was that my car, or a description of my car, was used in some type of crime that they wouldn't tell me about. There was no people involved, no descriptions of a person at all, or any type of suspect.
And this was 4:20, and they said that it had happened during the last 20 minutes.
Right. Then when I had shown them the car, let them feel the exhaust manifold, the engine, everything, come back inside, the young officer comes in and says nervously, I don't want to call you a liar, but I think your story has something missing, or you're not telling us everything. And it's the typical put the pressure on, cop routine. And I said, what are you talking about? Tell me what the hell you're going to charge me with. And they kept saying, oh, you're not being charged with anything. You're not being charged with anything. And I said, well, then let me know what it is my car is supposed to be used in. So the young officer finally comes out after getting the okay from apparently his senior officer, Officer Mike Camarillo. Mike Camarillo, badge number 903 from the St. John's Police Department, who told him it's okay to go ahead and tell me what they're looking for. The young officer, Graham, says that the victim, who is supposedly a girl, that's all they would say, was somewhere near the park, the St. John's City Park, and my car, that has supposedly been described to a T or something, drove up alongside, and I was the passenger in my own car. The driver came up alongside and apparently jumped out and tried to grab her in an attempted kidnapping. So here I am, now they're telling me 20 minutes after they first came into our premises that it's attempted kidnapping that they're looking for. And I almost...
Now remember, folks, he left alone, came back alone, didn't go near the park. He did the errands, and he was here for 2 hours with me, working, when they said that this had happened within the last 20 minutes. And then all of a sudden, when they realized that that wasn't going to fly, what did they say?
Well, they said a lot of things.
Well, go ahead.
But the funny thing here is that it doesn't make sense that they didn't have a suspect at first. They just had a vehicle description. And then suddenly, after this officer disappears with my paperwork and comes back later, suddenly I am confirmed to be in the passenger seat of my own car during this attempted kidnapping.
By somebody who's driving your car.
Right. Someone driving my car. But they don't have a description of the driver.
And then the 20 minutes changes to an hour.
Yeah, it's just an hour, then even one guy, even an hour, hour and a half. Changing stories here. And then they also wanted me to go down to the station with them. And I said, for what? And they said, to come down and make a statement. And I said, I'm basically making a statement right now. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. And they really tried to keep me away from you, Bill. They tried to keep me outside. They tried to keep me near the door so I wouldn't be in near you or your desk where you were working on a BBS.
But we got together, and I told him that he had been here with me, that he had left alone, had come back alone, was gone about 45 to 50 minutes. Told him what time frame that was, and told him not to go anywhere. And since they're talking about attempted kidnapping, he shouldn't say another word, period.
So that's what I told him. I said, no, I'm not going to go down to the station. And they tried to give me the excuse that, well, at the station is where all our forms are, and you can fill out the statement down at the police station where the forms are convenient for them. And I said, no, basically, they can leave and I'm done talking with them because I don't get a good feeling from this.
No, and I wouldn't either, and didn't. And now you've had a lot of police training because you were going to be a police officer in Los Angeles and have had literally years of police training.
That's correct. What's really funny is police procedure, if they had a description of my vehicle and they see it parked out in front of the center, the first thing they would do was run the license plate or run the VIN number and find out who it's registered to.
But they didn't do that.
No. Either they did and they pretended they didn't. So they walk in here saying, does anyone know who owns this black Blazer, basically, out front? You know, real good cops, right? You know, real smart. So that's number one. When I went out to show them the engine, this is when the St. John's police officer, while the sheriff is fueling my crankshaft and water pump for heat, this is when the St. John's police officer runs my VIN plate off my car. And since I've had police training, I understood all the codes that came back from the dispatcher saying that there were no 1029s or any warrants on the car or if it's stolen, if the registration has expired, all of that. All of that should have been done before they even walked in the door. They were doing that, I think, to stall for time while Mr. Young Cop was off powwowing with whoever down at the corner with the other police officers or whoever was down there.
I think the reason he came back with beads of sweat all over his face and this look of abject fear was he probably got his butt chewed royal.
Yep.
See, Bart has on his license plate CAJI, CAJI 001. So probably the reason they didn't run the car is they probably thought it was mine. And that's the only car that's been sitting in front of this building for about the last 4 weeks because I've been on vacation for two. The last week I've been home catching up on the mail, mm-hmm. except for late at night when I come in to do the show. And when they realized their mistake, I think they were going to take Bart down to the police station and try to give him the third degree and threaten him with jail unless he would give them something juicy about me.
Yep.
And, of course, Bart wasn't going to bite on that because, number one, even though he was apprehensive, he wasn't afraid. And he's had enough police training to know the technique.
Oh, yeah. They almost played good cop, bad cop on me.
And these are the guys who live here. These are the guys who read Veritas. These are the guys who know exactly what we do and that we're engaged here in the business of collecting information to save the liberty and freedom for all of us have turned. They have turned. Now, we're going to find out everybody that was involved. We're going to get a copy of the police report. What do you want to bet, folks? There wasn't any victim because they all just vanished into thin air as soon as they realized that ain't nobody was biting on their bullshit. So, I don't know what's going to come of this, folks, but I'll tell you this. The heat is on. And we have intelligence from all over the country that if you're a patriot, and I don't know if anything's going to happen or not, but I'm going to tell you this. If you're a known patriot, and especially if you're a known patriot leader, leave home now and don't come home until about a week after the 4th of July is over with. Listen to me carefully. Go somewhere. Don't come back for about a week after the 4th of July is over with. I'm not going to tell you why I'm telling you that. You should know me well enough by now to know that I have very good reason to do it. Don't go away. Ladies and gentlemen, the hour of the time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. If you would like to get your hands on some real money, not this funny, phony, counterfeit stuff that the Department of the Treasury, an agency of the International Monetary Fund, which is another agency of the United Nations, has foisted upon the nation. Gold and silver are the only constitutional money and the only money under the law. Check the United States Code and you will find that money, if silver coins are an equivalent value in gold coin, and a dollar is a specific measurement of silver coin or a specific equivalent value of gold coin. The Constitution for the United States of America says no state shall tender in payment of debt anything other than gold or silver coin. That is the greatest proof that I can offer you to prove that we are not operating under the Constitution for the United States of America. And there are many others. Many, many others. For instance, when's the last time you checked to see if the Bill of Rights still protects your rights? You should be able to read the front page of any newspaper in this country and see that the Bill of Rights are gone, and this anti-terrorism bill is going to take what little is left right down the toilet. So call Swiss America Trading 1-800-289-2646 and do it now, folks. By the way, Swiss America Trading, because they sponsored this broadcast, is now under a major attack by journalists of the Arizona Republic, the same little Fritzy, little socialist puppeteer, who printed that lie front page article about yours truly, William Cooper. So call them. Give them your support. They've stood behind this broadcast and continue to stand behind it, even though they have everything in the world to lose. You owe them. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. Bart, after they all scrambled into the wind, we attempted to find out exactly who they were and where the criminal report is, or the police report, and tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be fun. I want everyone to get a piece of paper and a pen, because I'm going to give out the phone numbers for the St. John's Police Department and Sheriff's Department later. Let them know and give them a piece of your mind so that they can't get away with this kind of crap. Getting really pissed now. Well, first of all, after they left, we sat around and trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And pieces started to fit. Inconsistencies became apparent. Timing, obviously. Whatever they said didn't jive. So I called the St. John's Police Department. And I asked for the names of the officers who came over and to our location. I said, this is Barton Chow. And you had a couple officers over here a little while ago. I'd like to know their names. I got put on hold for a long time. And then Officer Mike Camarillo came on the line, sounding very nervous. He even stuttered a little, paused a lot, did a lot of and I said, what's your name? You're the officer that came, right? And he said, I was one of the officers, yes. And I said, what is your name? He gave me his name. And I said,
what was his name?
His name was Mike Camarillo. His badge number is 903. Mike Camarillo. And he told me that the case officer, or the officer who's handling the case and they'll be doing the report, is, and he volunteered this so fast, it was great, Officer Darren Graham, badge number 905. And
trying to get you off of him onto the other guy. You see, they're used to scaring people, folks. When we weren't afraid, they don't know what to do when you're not afraid of them. That's the only weapon that they have to use against us, and when we're not afraid, their weapon just falls to pieces. It's like a pile of rust in the hands of a soldier.
I almost laughed when this guy was just so nervous and just kind of stuttering on the phone with me, and he volunteered his fellow officer's information very fast. Officer Darren Graham. Badge number 905, he offered it immediately. And then when I asked what his badge number was, he paused and solemnly said, 903 is my badge number. So Darren Graham of the St. John's Police Department, badge number 905, and Mike Camarillo, badge number 903, St. John's Police Department. St. John's Police Department is area code 520-337-2440. That's 520-337-2440. I then asked what the name of the other officer from the Sheriff's Department was. They never told me when they were here that he was from the Sheriff's Department, but I had known that because I recognized the badge, even though he was not in uniform, but he was carrying a gun. He then said, oh, he's from the Sheriff's Department. You'll have to talk to them. He wanted to really hang up really fast with me. So I asked him, what's the Sheriff's Department phone number? And he gave it to me real fast, too.
And then you ask about the police report.
Right. I asked, I said, I want a copy of the police report that's going to be done by the case officer, Darren Graham. He said, well, you're going to have to talk to Darren Graham, and I don't know when it'll be done. I asked him when it would be done. He said, I don't know. It could be a day. It could be a week. I really don't know. It's hard to say, and we're moving. We're moving police stations. We're going to a new police station, and he just kept
built, by the way, with a lot of federal funds.
That's correct. So then I then hung up with him, called the Sheriff's Department phone number, and that's area code 520-337-4321. And I got the same person that answers for the St. John's Police Department. I almost laughed. I then asked, apparently they've been tipped off by now, because then I asked the lady who answered the phone. I said who I was, that they had been visited. I want to know the name of the sheriff, the deputy sheriff that came by. I got put on hold for a long time again. I was then put in touch with a guy named Chris, who is claimed to be the dispatcher. I asked Chris, who was very nervous. I said who I was. I said I want to know the name of the sheriff who was dispatched to my location and spoke with me. He said, I can't tell you. I said, you don't know you're the dispatcher and you don't know? He says, no, I do know, but I can't tell you. And I said, why can't you tell me the deputy's name? He said, it's against our policy, or we don't have to. I can't remember exactly what it was. And I said, what do you mean you don't have to, or it's against your policy?
Secret police. The Gestapo is real, and it's here in St. John's, Arizona.
So I said, I was adamant, and I pushed for it. What he told me, he put me on hold, came back and said, I'll have to call back after 8 o'clock in the morning tomorrow and speak with a lieutenant, and I don't remember the name, but I could get it if I wanted to.
More fear tactics. Most people are scared to. We're not. We will call, and if we have to, we'll go down there, and we will stand in front of the lieutenant and demand the information.
That's right.
And if we don't get it, we will go into court and subpoena the information.
Sure will. He got me pissed now. So they refused to give me the information, told me that I have to call back after 8 o'clock in the morning, speak to a lieutenant, and then that would get the information from through the lieutenant. Then I asked, okay, Chris, what's your last name, Dispatcher Chris? And then he covered up the microphone and whispered to whoever was next to him. I assume it was the lady who answered the phone first time. Do I have to give him my last name? Came back. I don't have to give you my last name.
More secret police.
I said, big,
brave guys.
I said, do you have a badge number? And he said, yes. I said, what's your badge number? I don't have to give it to you, is what he said. And I just started to laugh. And so I just got Dispatcher Chris.
By the way, the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department's the same number, isn't it?
It's a different number, however, the same lady answered the phone.
Okay, well, give the other number. Give the Sheriff's Department number.
It's 520-337-4321. St. John's Police Department is area code 520-337-2440.
Now, don't get me wrong, folks. Normally, these are good people. They've always been good people. They've never given us any problem. Somebody has obviously set this up because it's a sheer frame-up.
Yep.
Absolute frame job that they botched 100%. Either that, or somebody has threatened them in some way to make them do this, but they've turned upon the people who are doing their very best to protect the liberty and freedom for all of us. And this is going to happen throughout the country. Don't think just because you've known people for years and they've been good people that they won't turn on you. You'll find people will turn on you right and left, even your own family, when they think that they're at risk. Well, you want to give those numbers one more time and the names?
Okay. I want everyone to call these people and give them a piece of your mind, because this is a...
No, folks, we don't think for 1 minute, and we're not trying to get out of anything that we may be liable for under the law. Understand that. We just want to let you know who they are and what their numbers are so you can tell them that what they're doing is not right.
What really made me upset is that we hand deliver personally copies of Veritas to the police departments and the sheriff's departments locally to let them know what's going on.
For free. A lot of copies,
that's
too.
That's right, for free.
Cost us a lot of money. Also, that one officer, Bart told him, he says, you know, it's possible that I'm being framed because of what we do here. And the one officer said what?
He said, yes, and that's one of the factors why we're looking at you.
In other words, since we're standing up for their liberties and freedoms, since we're trying to protect the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, that's why they were accusing Bart. And he as much as admitted it. Good night, folks.
Good night, folks.
God bless you all. And if something happens to us, just continue the fight. They're on our case. And bad things are just around the corner for all of us. And don't you ever forget it. Don't you think for 1 minute that you're safe in this country today.